This is Mae Bressel. It's the second half of tape number 854, April the 18th, 1988. Last week I was talking about white supremacist William Pierce of the National Alliance, formerly the American Nazi Party, headed by George Rockwell, who was his mentor, and the fact that Pierce had bought 100 shares of AT&T to try to get the powers that be to change the hiring records on having blacks because they are inferior, and he has a quoted goal of a worldwide Hitler-inspired regime. Pierce, having taught physics at the University of Oregon, had an Air Force contract, one or two, and worked for Pratt Whitney of United Technology. Now, there was an article about William Pierce and the American Nazi Party that was taken over by Pierce after Rockwell was murdered in 1967. This article came out in the Washington Post December 25th, 1982. And in this article, it describes the party, Nazi Party, that is going to change its name to the New Order. Well, that is the name that Richard Butler used with the Aryan Nations, and they worked together. And this article from the Washington Post said that the Nazi Party will also be working, in addition to being proud of the National Space Program, they'll work on matters such as pollution and halting the nuclear weapon spread, and they will raise money to support research in cystic fibrosis and other diseases that primarily strike people of Northern European ancestry. And I wonder just how much money went from the National Alliance and the Nazi Party that was taken over after Rockwell was dead by William Pierce, how much they've put into, and are they interested in cystic fibrosis. The reason I bring this up is that here is an endeavor to put Mrs. Meese on the payroll of the Multiple Sclerosis Group, and she was a volunteer and then gets paid to be on the board of that group. And I must remind you, and new listeners maybe don't know this, that Elmer Bopps, the long mentor to Richard Nixon, to his career, literally his godfather of politics, brought Waffen-SS Gestapo agent Otto von Bolschwing to the United States. And before von Bolschwing came to California to head up the TCI Corporation, whose subsidiary was bought by Albert Hakim to become the Stanford Technology Training Group. Before he was there, von Bolschwing worked for Elmer Bopps in the American Cancer Society and assisted him on medical trips or did work in the medical-related business. And, of course, Otto von Bolschwing was very much part of the Iron Guard, of sending people to their deaths, the Romanian Iron Guard, and working with the Gestapo, a long member of Heinrich Himmler's Gestapo, who came to work in this country with Elmer Bopps. And Elmer Bopps became the first lay citizen after World War II to head the American Cancer Society that was formerly headed by doctors. And on the board, he immediately put William Donovan, who was the head of the OSS during World War II. And the OSS were dealing with Nazis such as Reinhard Gehlen and von Bolschwing before the war was even over. So the Nazis have a history of being involved in medical situations, experimentations, and also working in this country along those lines. So when I read about the New Order wanting to assist research in cystic fibrosis and other diseases, I wonder really how far that goes. Now, this article in the Washington Post on the Arlington Nazis is written by Leah Latimer, and the gist of the article is that the Nazi Party is moving away from Arlington, Virginia, where they were located, and that they're breaking up, and that after the death of George Lincoln Rockwell, who incidentally was an official in the Navy, he was an officer in the Navy and a graduate of Brown University. He wasn't just some kooky Nazi. He was linked to our military establishment and to a college where a lot of the hierarchy of intelligence goes, such as E. Howard Hunt. But the article about the plans to leave Arlington are quotations and research of John Reese, the gentleman who was involved in putting computers from the Los Angeles Police Department into Western Gold. John Reese is the person putting down the importance of the Nazi movement in 1982, when Richard Butler and the Aryan Nations and the Order were getting new muscles and new links to Germany, to Nazis in Germany, And John Rhys is the person quoted in these articles to play down the importance of the Nazis in America. This article, as I say, from the Washington Post said that the American Nazi Party is moving to the Midwest and their headquarters stayed in the East, that they changed their name to the National Socialist White People's Party, and of course William Pierce took over when Rockwell died. John Rhys doesn't mention that. It explains that this former naval officer, George Lincoln Rockwell, was shot. And then John Rhys, quoted here, said that the Nazi group probably had 50 or 60 members, according to John Rhys, the author of a newsletter. Now, the truth is that the Nazi Party, by 1982, was recruiting the Minutemen. The Minutemen are now recruiting former and retired CIA. And John Rhys was putting down a situation that mushroomed and grew and made it sound like there were only 50 members. And Meese works with Daniel Graham, formerly the Defense Intelligence Agency, who shares offices with Fritz Kramer, who I believe is the Waffen-SS Fritz Kramer, a member of the same organization as Otto von Bolschwing. And so John Rhys becomes the expert. And then the article continues, "I think if we said it had 10 members today, it would be an exaggeration." Now, that's 1982, when the Klan, the Nazis, Richard Butler, a former scientist from Lockheed that worked for the government defense, goes up to Idaho and has the Aryan Nations up there. And John Rhys, who always cries communist under every log and tree, reverses it here and tells in the Washington Post that there's only 10 members in the Nazi Party. And he's putting down the importance, and the importance of William Pierce, who he doesn't mention. He mentions the late Rockwell, as I said, but nobody else. And then the article goes on to say that the group would be active, as I mentioned, raising money for cystic fibrosis. And I think that would cause a few eyes to wonder, well, how much are these people into the medical experiments in this country? Now, Edwin Meese was down in Bolivia this past week, and the newspaper articles had different titles. The LA Times had a story, "Meese stresses the Bolivian role in the drug war." And it's very important to remember, and I might have mentioned it many times before, as long as Bolivia was under the care of the cocaine kings of the establishment of Colonel Luis Arce Gomez, the former interior minister, under Claus Barbie, the cocaine flowed into this country, and Claus Barbie worked with the American authorities and the CIA. As soon as Gomez was kicked out of office and the government was changed in 1982, and then the profits were out of the cocaine going into a Democratic Party and not a fascist party, then the administration said, we have to stop the cocaine in Bolivia, but they didn't mind it before. March 19th, 1981, I have a news story. Colonel Luis Arce, R-K, it's pronounced Gomez, the interior minister of Bolivia, met with advisors to Ronald Reagan last December to discuss possible ways to cut the flow of cocaine from Bolivia. He discussed it and met it with them, but according to the DEA reports, the colonel's interior ministry was issuing permits for growers in Bolivia to produce cocaine, and the growers would pay $40 tax on each bale of cocoa leaf. Colonel Arce is said to have taken a personal cut of $10 per bale. His annual income was $1.5 million at least, and the DEA told Latin American Weekly Report that the Bolivian government is entrenched in Bolivia's coke production. So this was in the news reports going back to 1981 when Mr. Arce Gomez was meeting with Ronald Reagan's group. Covert Action, November 25th, winter edition, 1986, has a long article on cocaine, Claus Barbie, Bolivia, and Stefano Della Calle, the terrorist that worked down in Bolivia and South America with the cocaine group setting up death squads. And there's a picture in this issue of this General Meza, Garcia Meza, with Bohai Pak of the Moonies. And the Moonies were very close to the cocaine operation in Bolivia. Reverend Moon and Bohai Pak and Claus Barbie had a very close relationship, as did the Reagan administration from the time it came into power. And, of course, the Reagan administration entertained Mr. Luis Arce Gomez in 1984 in Dallas, Texas, when Reagan was nominated again to be president of the United States. Richard Allen and a team of Americans entertained him, and their problem then was how to cut off the money from Bolivia, the cocaine money, because the profits now would get into a democratic society, as I say. As long as the money's in the hands of the fascists, it's okay. The New York Times, October 17, 1982, has this story, Palmy Days Over for Nazi in Bolivia. And it tells about Klaus Barbie and his frequent meetings with Colonel R.K. Gomez, who he in turn goes up to see Ronald Reagan in Washington, and that Mr. Klaus Barbie was going to have a hard time now, and indeed he did, as soon as the government changed hands. But here is Edwin Meese down in Bolivia finding ways to stop the cocaine from growing, and he was very much part with Ronald Reagan of working with those very same people until Bolivia changed their government. Now, in terms of elections, election provocateurs, and thinking of the Reichstag fire, there's a whole lot of terrorism that took place this past week and a half, and I'm going to put it in chronological order, and I think you should, too, cut the articles, because what we're going to get, and it gives George Bush a chance now to be exposed in the media, where he sat behind before as the great leader fighting terrorism. Of course, he was down in the Philippines with Marcos, thanking them for their great democracy at one point, ridiculed for it. But the terrorism that's escalating now is what I call pre-election terrorism. In 1986, when Reagan wanted to control Congress, there was a Pakistan hijacking one day. One day later, there was a synagogue that was blown apart in Turkey with many Jews killed praying in the synagogue. None of those were ever solved. And then the third day after those two terrorisms, I remarked on World Watchers that Ronald Reagan left his eagle's nest in Santa Barbara and went to Santa Barbara to start, Los Angeles, to start campaigning for Ed Chow. Well, the terrorism didn't work, but it does leave the general sense of what will a newcomer do who can't handle international affairs like Mr. Dukakis or Jesse Jackson. It takes a man of experience such as George Bush, so the ideas will soon get into people's heads, and subtly through various programs and talk shows, Bush will be on all the time talking about drugs in Bolivia or hijackers. And this we saw just in the past 2 weeks, actually April the 7th, there was a hijacking where the hijackers wanted the release of 17 in Kuwait. This is the same group that Albert Hakim and Oliver North and Gorbanifar were arranging the release for, and the hijacking story has been in the news all week. Then on the 15th of April, explosion rips the hull of U.S. Navy frigate in Persian Gulf, and 10 were hurt. So that was another terrorism act. There was the hijacking the week before, and then the explosion on the U.S. frigate. Of course, nobody is punished as yet, because these are agent provocateur incidences that just take a lot of headlines. Then also on the 15th, a car bomb kills an American at a Naples club, and all of a sudden the media and the powers that be are looking for the Japanese Red Army. And out of nowhere, a long time gone, is the Japanese Red Army. They'll soon be calling for Carlos, another provocateur. And in between, the hijackers are at Cyprus leaving Beirut. And then the hijackers are in Algiers and get some more weapons, and that's in the news. And then on the 16th of April, Japanese terrorists suspected, Japanese Red Army, it comes out again for bombing the USO in Italy. Then another terrorist headline comes. Millions of dollars Gaddafi giving aid to Noriega in Panama. Bush reveals. Now, these little things used to be revealed by the National Security Council, by the Secretary of State, by the Secretary of Defense. But candidate Bush is right in there giving his little lies, such as saying that Gaddafi bombed the Berlin Disco. So Bush is getting the headlines with this kind of talk. And then on April the 17th, new wave of terror. Italian senator killed by the Red Brigades. So what we have in the past week are the Red Brigades, the Japanese Red Army, the United States USO hit, the U.S. freighter, the frigate hit in the Persian Gulf. So just start adding up these little terrorisms and see how they build to a crescendo. These situations go bananas until we have an election. Then they're quiet for 2 to 4 years until another election period comes up. I just don't know who has the time or money to investigate each individual case, but it all adds up to a lot of terrorism at a time when people go to vote, and that's the important point about the actions, to get people upset about this and to send in somebody that they know has had a lot of experience, huh? Like George Bush. Now, I did several broadcasts on the company OPIC, Overseas Private Investment Corporation, and they had two tangled relationships that I went into detail. One involved Edwin Meese and, again, his friend E. Robert Wallach, who's his attorney for Meese, who takes care of his finances. And it has to do with the OPIC Corporation involved in the Iraq pipeline. And the company, OPIC, was to insure the pipeline, but they were going to pay Shimon Peres a fat fee not to blow it up. Israel wouldn't blow it up. And attorney Wallach already made $1 million attorney fees, and he got Edwin Meese to put $60,000 into this affair. And they would be protected by OPIC's an insurance private investment corporation to be assured that the pipeline wouldn't be blown up. And on the other hand, I mentioned the Overseas Private Investment Corporation was also busy over in Costa Rica with John Hull. Besides Wallach making $1 million, Hull got a $375,000 loan that can't be accounted for. And Robert Owen, formerly of Robert Keith Gray Associates, working with Oliver North, was the man instrumental to passing the money down to John Hall's ranch. Hall gets also $800 a month from the CIA for his bodyguards. And I talked about that company working not only in the Middle East with the Iraq pipeline, but down in Costa Rica, that very controversial location of John Hall. Now, I've mentioned before that the Robert Owen public relations firm, not Robert Owen, the Robert Gray public relations firm, where Owen came out of to do the dirty work with the Contras down there in Central America, is a public relations firm that took over at the time that Mullen Associates had to go into the decline and not be visible. Mullen was the office where the Watergate defendants were paid. They were paid out of that office. Robert Gray was a very active participant in the Republican activities parties, and he was the director. Under Director George Bush of the CIA, Robert Gray had worked with Bobby Inman and Henry Kissinger and Edwin Wilson. And Robert Gray's public relations office opened and took over from a Mullen Associates. As I say, Mullen was exposed. Now, I came across an article this past week cleaning out some files, Salt Lake Tribune, December the 7th, 1975. And what the article is about is the formation of that insurance company, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, the one involved with the profits that Ed Meese would get with his friend Wallach and Bechtel would bill, and also the profits John Hull would get. And I came across an article, Salt Lake Tribune, 1975, and the gist of the article is that Wallace F. Bennett, he's the father of Robert Bennett, who ran the Robert Mullen offices for E. Howard Hunt, G. Gordon Liddy, and Frank Sturgis, a gentleman named in the Christic affidavit, and for others. The Bennett office was run by Robert Mullen in Washington, and it was a front for the CIA. And Wallace Bennett, who ran this office after Watergate was over, became a board member of OPIC, the new company that is involved with the pipeline and with John Hull. Was formed in 1975. The Watergate story was winding down after 1974-75. And OPIC was formed. And who is on the board of OPIC but Wallace Bennett, the father of Robert Bennett, who ran the Mullen Company for the CIA for the entire Watergate saga. And Wallace Bennett was interviewed in the Salt Lake Tribune. He said it's challenging to be a director of the new Overseas Private Investment Corporation, which is a government agency created by Congress to ensure U.S. investments overseas. And he tells about his 24 years in the Senate, and it was his son that ran the Watergate operations out of the office in Washington, D.C. And he described how OPIC would guarantee protection for companies such as Dow Chemical and for petrochemical plants in South Korea and in Brazil, which was very much a military dictatorship at the time. And Wallace Bennett was one of the main directors, new directors of this company that was formed. And this company was instrumental, as I say, in very much of the Iran-Contra affair. And so it reminded me of material I had at the time of the Watergate hearings, how Mr. Bennett's son was indeed running the offices of the Mullen Associates set up by the CIA, and then the Mullen in turn became Robert Gray's offices, and then Robert Gray hired Robert Owen, and Owen went on to be the dispenser of funds down there in Central America. So the continuation of Watergate is important in the continuity of Wallace Bennett and Robert Bennett, and how the father and son were working with OPIC and also with the Watergate persons who later could move their entire operation over to Robert Gray's offices, which they did. Now, I just want to mention one other subject. I'm covering a lot of material on this tape, but this has to do with disinformation. George Bush, as the great CIA director, communicator, and the people he works with, and how lies are put out that later are proven to be just lies, nothing else, and we can look back and see what kind of shenanigans these dirty tricksters use and have used to get into office and to continue their Cold War lies that are later proven to be lies. I'm referring now to an article by Roger Fontaine, published July the 11th, 1984, in the Washington Times, published by Reverend Moon, the close friend of the Bolivian dictators and Klaus Barbie and his associates. The article is regarding the shooting of Eden Pastora, which is the subject of the Christic Institute suit, and the title of the article is Clues Link Managua to Eden Pastora's Life. And the gist of the article, it's a long article, is that the Nicaraguan government, through probably a Basque agent, were the ones that shot Eden Pastora, that the shooting was done by Cuba, by Fidel Castro, and Nicaragua, which we know isn't true, and that a Basque gentleman, a Marxist-Leninist since 1970, was working with the Soviet Union and Moscow's client states, as well as with other terrorists such as the Irish Republican Army and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. And the article, as I say, was written by Roger Fontaine, large, long article, big black letters, on the shooting of Pastora by the Marxist-Leninists and those people out of Cuba. And, of course, Nicaragua was saying it was a CIA explosion. The plastics came from the CIA, which turned out to be true. But the gist of the article was to blame the communist Cuba and Ortega for trying to kill Eden Pastora, written by Roger Fontaine. And then I have other articles on the Cartergate papers that were stolen when Ronald Reagan wanted to become president, and all of his future appointees were very busy helping him by stealing Jimmy Carter's papers. And this article, July 8, 1983, goes on to say two men were blaming each other for the Carter papers being stolen, one a Mr. Halper and the other one Mr. Garrick. And the article says Halper, 37, was in charge of foreign policy issues for George Bush's campaign. In 1980, he joined the Reagan campaign after Bush was named as Reagan's running mate. He's the son of Raymond Klein, formerly high official of the CIA. He's also a close associate of Roger Fontaine, who worked in the Bush campaign and now works on Central American issues for William Clark, Reagan's assistant for national security. So Roger Fontaine is close to the people who stole the papers that Ronald Reagan used to brief him for a debate with Jimmy Carter. Roger Fontaine worked for George Bush on the Bush campaign. Roger Fontaine worked with William Clark on the Central American issues. So when Mr. Eden Pastora was almost killed and eight others were killed with the La Penca bombing, it is the disinformation of the George Bush people working closely with Bush, with Central American William Clark, that came out with that large story that Eden Pastora was killed by a Basque terrorist sent by Ortega and Fidel Castro, a Marxist-Leninist. Now, the history is that without the Christic Institute, we wouldn't know who was behind La Penca bombing. It was Danny Sheehan and his group that helped Martha Honey, a person who was at the bombing and injured, and Tony Evergan, her husband. And the truth of the bombing is going to be coming out in the lawsuit that the Christic Institute has filed. But in the meanwhile, there isn't always a Danny Sheehan to follow up on these stories, and every day we are fed lies and disinformation about who was doing the terrorism, who was doing the bombing, And that's why I say the stories of the Pakistan bombing or the Turkey shootout at the synagogue, those were never solved. They didn't even bother to lie. And now all these terrorist incidents that are happening in the Gulf and with the Red Brigades in Italy and the Japanese Red Army in Italy and all these terrorist things, those again can be the same kind of National Security Council, CIA, Defense Department, lies and conclusions, and people have to just swallow those cases because individually, as I say, there aren't enough Danny Sheehans to do the matter. But in this case, I thought it was interesting that the blatant lies can be linked again to George Bush, the former CIA director, and I know he will run his campaign with the same kind of blatant lies he used before, and he also, by being selected as the vice president, benefited if Reagan could have a debate with Jimmy Carter and use the stolen papers. So the terrorism that's coming down and the lies and disinformation keep coming back to the encampment around CIA director George Bush, and that's another reason I say we can expect a lot of bombing of Marxist, Leninist, and let's bring on Carlos. That's the only thing left bring out, and then they can tangle them for a long time to come. There was that shootout in Italy, as I say, where a politician was killed this weekend, and they are blaming the Italian Red Brigades. Now, a well-known prisoner who only was in prison a few days or a month is out of prison. His name is Licio Gelli. And an article in the paper just Sunday said, freed prisoner calls on judge, Milan, Italy. The alleged mastermind of two of Italy's most sensational post-war scandals made a courtesy call on the judge who had him released from jail. He was in Switzerland before and had to pay to get out of jail, so this time he is out thanks to the judge. I wanted to thank the magistrate who granted me the liberty, who's given me back my life, said Licio Gelli. Antonio Pisa ordered the release Monday in the Parma prison of Licio Gelli because of his health. This is the same judge who charged Gelli with fraudulent bankruptcy in 1982 following the collapse of Banco Ambrosiano, $1.2 billion in Panama dummy funds has never been found, and also he was charged for violence of the, he's in Italy for the Bologna bombing where 85 people were killed, and goodness knows the list of injured is large and it changes depending which article you read, but many people were injured. So this judge has let him out of jail, and maybe he'll leave the country like he did before, and he has the gracious consent that he suffered enough, I guess, in jail. Now, Danny Sheehan was in Santa Cruz a few weeks ago. A lot of you subscribers have taken note of that. Some of you were there when he spoke, but those of you on the East Coast or North or South or West don't get access to some of the things Danny Sheehan says. They're certainly not covered in the major newspapers. And a small newspaper, actually the Comic News up in Santa Cruz, had an article about an interview with Danny Sheehan, and it's titled, Sheehan Takes on George Bush. And, of course, that doesn't make the headlines, would it? And I don't have time to go into much of this. I'll just quickly say that Danny Sheehan says he has facts implicating, among others, George Bush in a series of covert activities stopping nothing short of murder. His most explosive charge, described only at a reception, links Bush to the 1976 murder of the ex-Chilean ambassador to the United States under deposed Chilean socialist President Salvador Allende. That was Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt. And, of course, I've referred to Killer Bush for years because there is ample evidence, and I'm not Danny Sheehan, that George Bush was behind the murder of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt right there in Washington, D.C., and also for blowing up Air Cuba, the Air Cubana airline, where 78 athletes, Cuban athletes, were murdered. I will get back more. I do a lot on Killer Bush from time to time, but I think it's interesting that Danny Sheehan is talking about George Bush and evidence of his being a murderer, and it is indeed a tragedy that these things don't make McNeil Lair, Crossfire, Nightline. The real tragedy is that these known killers and planners of murders keep repeating the privilege of getting into office as president and the press does not pursue these things the way they should be doing them. Well, my time is up, so that is enough news for this week. There's a lot more already, and for next week, and it hasn't even started. There's so much to get caught up. But this is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week combing those newspapers for some of these little gems. So take care, and I'll be back with you next week.